They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast, trade deadline edition of the podcast, and really only one major topic out there. That's Anthony Davis. The Pelicans forward has requested a trade. The Lakers want him. Boston wants the Pelicans to wait until after the deadline. A lot of drama between two basketball superpowers right now competing for that player. Talk about that and much more. I bring back Rohan Nadkarni, the great writer over at Sports Illustrated. We talk about AD, Boston trade packages, how desperate the Lakers should get. We also look back on the Kristaps Porzingis trade in New York. How big a risk are the Knicks taking in dealing Kristaps Porzingis? A little bit later on, Ira Winderman, the great writer from the South Florida Sun Sentinel, he drops by and we discuss everything Miami Heat, from what their attitude is before the trade deadline and the long-term play there. Pat Riley, how long is he going to stick around? Eric Spoelstra, how much power will he have within the organization? And what exactly is the Heat's plan to get back on a championship track? A reminder, if you like this podcast, one way you can support it, go over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the very best way you can support this podcast and make sure that we do it week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, joining me now on the podcast to break down everything that could happen over the next 48 hours before the trade deadline, Rohan Nadkarni, the great staff writer over at Sports Illustrated. What's up, Rohan? You're back stateside, back from the mid-January vacation.
Yeah, you know, I feel like there's if they're going to get out of New York during the winter is the best time to do it. So I went somewhere warm. I haven't fully snapped back to reality yet, but the NBA waits for no one.
That's right, especially the trade deadline, which is earlier this year than it has been in years past. February 7th, Thursday, the NBA trade deadline, and it all seems to be centered around one player and what's going to happen with Anthony Davis. The latest information we have as we record this late Tuesday morning, the LA Lakers have made several offers to the Pelicans for Anthony Davis. They have offered all of their core young players, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, in a variety of different packages. They have offered to take on some of the bad contracts on the Lakers roster, specifically Solomon Hill. And they have offered multiple draft picks. The Pelicans, to this point, have not been all that satisfied with the Lakers' offer. Reportedly, they would like as many as 4 first-round picks back from the Lakers. Meanwhile, the Boston Celtics are on the sideline, unable to trade for Anthony Davis, but encouraging, in the strongest possible way, the Pelicans to wait until after the trade deadline, until July 1st, to make a deal when they can get into the mix. So, Rohan, I'll start with you first here. What do you make of everything we know up until this point about Anthony Davis and the trade talks?
Well, this has turned into like a high-stakes Casino Royale version of the trade deadline. It's the most incredible game of poker I've ever seen. The Lakers, to their credit, I think are offering everything they can offer. Short of literally offering, you know, Zubac and Josh Hart too, this is the best trade offer they can make. They can tack on a couple extra picks, and I bet you they will. I bet you they will offer those picks, because I think this has all been orchestrated by Clutch Sports to put the pressure on the Lakers front office to go get Anthony Davis, and they recognize that. And to Magic Johnson and Rob Pelinka's credit, they're offering everything they can offer. I think what Boston's going to do, if I'm New Orleans, it comes down to, do I trust Danny Ainge? I think Danny Ainge has to be sweet-talking Dell Demps right now, and you would know better than me, but I'm sure Danny Ainge is telling him, hey, you know what we can offer. Just wait. The Lakers' offer is going to be there. Here's my fear if I'm New Orleans. Once the summer comes, you know, the Celtics don't have to offer Jason Tatum. You know, so maybe you can say the Pelicans are better off waiting. The Lakers' offer is going to be there forever. I just don't know that, A, if you're New Orleans, you want to deal with this for that many more months, right? You want to deal with it for 4.5 more months until July 1st when the Celtics can trade it, and Anthony Davis is trying to play and you're not letting him. And you have to also deal with the risks that when July 1st comes, is Boston actually going to offer you the things that you want? It's such an incredible, you know, gamesmanship situation right now that's what I'm fascinated by. But more than anything, I'm impressed that the Lakers have really stepped up to the table with their offer.
Yeah, okay, first, Boston is not saying that Jason Tatum will be in the deal. That's what I've been told. They're not saying he's not, but they're not going to directly say that they're willing to trade Jason Tatum because, look, the Celtics are trying to balance these trade talks with what they're trying to do this year. I mean, theoretically, this is still a finals contender. They've had their ups and downs this season, but as of late, they've been pretty damn good, and they're only a couple of games back of the number two seed with the potential. I know Milwaukee's playing great right now, but the potential to get as high as number one before the end of the season. Their players are getting healthy. Gordon Hayward's still a wild card, but this is still a team that can win something. And if it gets out that Jason Tatum is definitely going to be included, that's a problem for the Celtics this year. All that being said, from what I've been told, the Celtics' message to the Pelicans has been nothing's going to be off the table. Everything is negotiable. And the Celtics' point, like to your point, Rohan, like if just waiting and being uncomfortable for a few months is the Pelicans' biggest issue, that is a really dumb reason to make a trade. It really is. Because you can sit Anthony Davis down. You can tell him, go back to Los Angeles. And I would imagine that's probably the right thing to do. I mean, the Pelicans last year, they just dealt with this, didn't they? I mean, they thought DeMarcus Cousins was going to be signed to a max-level extension and be Anthony Davis's wingman for the foreseeable future. He tears his Achilles, and all their plans go up in smoke. I think it's advisable for the Pelicans not to play Anthony Davis for the rest of the season to avoid just that type of situation. The other issue I have with what you said is that the Lakers' offer is still going to be there in July. Yeah. Like February 8th, Rohan, the Lakers are not going to wake up and be like, yeah, you know what, we're good. We're done. That offer is not only going to be there, it's probably going to get even better if that's possible. They're probably going to have to beef it up even more. If the Pelicans front office is smart, they would play the Celtics and Lakers off each other for days, if not weeks. They would play those two sides against each other until they come up with the best possible deal. Now, the wild card in all this, from what I'm told, is Dell Demps. Now, there's a realistic possibility that if this gets past the trade deadline and there's no deal, Dell Demps could be out of a job. I mean, this team has struggled this year, and Dell Demps has been around for a while, and they don't have a great track record of success. There have been a couple of years where Dell Demps has been on the hot seat and either, you know, been allowed to keep his job or salvaged his job, which I think he did last year with that postseason run. So Dell Demps may have a sense of urgency to make a deal now to show his bosses that, look, we don't have Anthony Davis, but we do have three first-round draft picks. We've got two young starters in Lonzo and Brandon Ingram. There may be some urgency on the side of Dell Demps, but I do know for a fact there are several people, influential people, in that Pelicans organization that want to wait past Thursday.
Yeah, selfishly, I obviously want the trade to happen, right? I just want to see I want to see Anthony Davis play basketball first and foremost. Personally, I would love
to
see.
Do you really care if Anthony Davis plays basketball for the next 3 months? Like,
well, yeah, if he gets traded to the Lakers, I care. I'm saying selfishly, I want the trade happen because I like watching him play basketball.
Okay.
How is that a take?
Give me a reasonable argument that it makes sense for the Pelicans to do a deal now.
I can't. That's if you had let me get to my point, I was going to say.
I don't know. You might be sitting there with your Anthony Davis jersey on.
First of all, he's a great basketball player. Is this like a controversial thing that people like watching him play?
But my life isn't going to be affected one way or the other if I don't see him for the next 3 months.
Okay. Well, maybe you should like rediscover your love for the game of basketball then. Okay. I don't know what to tell you.
Continue.
Anyway, selfishly, I want him to get traded because I want him to play. I want to see him play with LeBron. I think 10,000 feet up, I agree with you. I don't think there's a reasonable argument to be made for the Pelicans not to wait. I agree that if it comes down to a couple months of awkwardness versus, you know, you making the biggest decision for the future of your franchise, you take the couple months of awkwardness and give yourself the best possible, you know, trade chip for Anthony Davis. We haven't even talked about the Knicks, right? What if the Knicks win the lottery and for some stupid reason are willing to trade, you know, the number one overall pick for Anthony Davis? I mean, there's so many reasons for them to wait. I'm with you that there's I can't make an argument for them not to do it other than my own selfish reasons of wanting to see Davis play with LeBron.
Okay, to follow up on that, you think it's a stupid idea to trade the number one pick for Anthony Davis?
It's not a stupid idea. I just think that it – well, we'll get to the Knicks, right? But theoretically, there's something in the works there that, I don't know, maybe you keep Zion and you bring in a couple other guys and I'd go with that team before trading a bunch of assets, whatever. I mean, we could get to the Knicks. I stupid, I guess, was not the right word, but the Knicks shouldn't jump the gun is all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, but – I'm a fan of watching Zion Williamson.
Oh, okay. Now it's okay to be a fan. Oh,
no, he's a fun guy to watch. Uh-huh. It's just that every time I open up Twitter and there's a highlight, it's a dunk. He's shooting under 30% from three, and he's only attempting 2 threes per game at the college level. So, you know, this is a separate conversation, but I mean, I would pump the brakes on the Zion Williamson is LeBron 2.0 or a can't-miss prospect. Anthony Davis is more than a can't-miss prospect. Anthony Davis is a can't-miss superstar at 25 years old right now. In a heartbeat, I wouldn't hesitate to trade the number one pick for Anthony Davis. If that's all it took, done.
Well, yeah. Sure. I don't think that's all it's going to take, but whatever. We'll get to the Knicks.
All right. The Lakers, you know, the reports now out there are that the Lakers are being asked to effectively go all in. Four number one draft picks, everything they've got on the roster. Is Anthony Davis worth an all-in type of offer from the Lakers?
Without a doubt. No question. I mean, first of all, you do it because it's what LeBron wants, right? If I'm being honest, you kind of have to – he has only – I hesitate to say this, but it feels like he only has 2 or 3 years left where he's going to be the guy that undoubtedly makes your team a finals contender. Once he's 37, 38, that becomes a little bit more risky, right? And then Davis is also the kind of guy who can then be your next superstar moving forward post-LeBron. I mean, he's someone who has 8, 9, 10 years, great years left, whatever. I think their offer makes a lot of sense. I think the Lakers should go as high as the Pelicans ask. To me, there's as long as they're keeping LeBron, there's not enough they can trade for Anthony Davis. I mean, they'll get role players around. They'll have cap space to go get another star to get good guys around him.
No, but they won't. Like, if you take on Solomon Hill, your cap space for next summer goes down to like $15 million.
They can stretch him. There are avenues. I mean, we saw it in Miami too, where good players were willing to take discounts to play there. You're going to get a Ray Allen type. You're going to get a Shane Battier type, those kinds of guys. It's not going to be a hard sell to get them to play in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, no. Shane Battier signed on to play with LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh.
Yeah, and I think guys are going to want to play with LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Well, no. I think they'd want to play with them, but Anthony Davis goes on the Lakers. They're not title favorites, not right away. You know, Shane Battier and all those role players that went to Miami. The Heat were either title winners or title favorites at that point. I think there's a bit of a difference. And the Lakers, if they go all in with all this, they're going to have to flesh out their roster. You got to add depth to that mix. You got to put a team together around those guys.
Are you arguing against this trade?
I'm arguing – I would – look.
If it's draft picks, I'll offer as many draft picks as the Pelicans want.
You and Billy King have something in common then. Like, it's the draft pick stuff is dangerous because – 4 first-round picks with the understanding that you can't do consecutive years, that takes you 8 years down the line. And LeBron's going to be gone, we assume. Anthony Davis might be gone at some point. Who knows what the state of the Lakers is going to be? And before you say, well, they're the Lakers. They're bound to be good. They've been bad over the last 4 or 5 years. They've had really bad teams as they've tried to rebuild this thing. So I'd be pretty cautious about dumping 4 first-round picks. Now, Boston can do it because it's not their picks.
Of course, Boston can do it.
It's not their picks, Rohan. They're trading Memphis's pick, Sacramento's pick, maybe one or two of their own, and they can also pull back on some of the picks because they've got the best player in the deal. Jason Tatum is head and shoulders better than anybody the Lakers have to offer. Do you disagree with that?
Maybe. I don't know if it's head and shoulders. I think if you had switched Brandon Ingram at Jason Tatum at the beginning of their careers, I'm just curious what that would have looked like. Absolutely.
No.
I mean, I think situation matters.
Brandon Ingram was given all the opportunity in the world in his first couple of years.
But it's not just about opportunity. It's about expectation. It's about system. It's about coaching. It's about culture. I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it simply than we're going to give you the ball and let you shoot 20 times a game. I actually think it worked in Jason Tatum's favor that wasn't what he had to do.
You know what the irony of this situation is? If the Lakers
had D'Angelo Russell, they'd have a better trade package.
I mean, no, forget D'Angelo Russell. If they had drafted Jason Tatum
instead
of Lonzo Ball, they wouldn't be in the situation. Jason Tatum would be the alpha pick there. So gut feeling, do you think it goes beyond the Thursday trade deadline?
I think it has to. I think we all as fans try to speak these things to existence. I think people want this trade to happen just because of how interesting it would be. But my gut tells me, I mean, what reason do the Pelicans have to do this deal now? I mean, the Lakers offer is going to be there. Like you said, maybe the Lakers throw in Josh Hart too in the summer because they feel the need to compete. If I'm the Pelicans, I'm just a little, I don't know that I trust Danny Ainge to make a great offer if I'm the Pelicans, but even if that does happen, then guess what? The Lakers offer is going to be there. Other teams are going to jump into the mix. If I'm the Pelicans, I wait. And if I know that, I can't imagine they don't.
Right. I think you have to. For putting Boston aside, and, you know, look, I've talked to a dozen different, you know, executives from different teams across around the league. I have yet to come across one executive, current or former, that has said it's the right move for the Pelicans to do the deal before the deadline. Everybody I've talked to has said you wait, you get to the summer, you sift through all the best offers. Because, you know, in a weird way, this could wind up being the best thing that could happen to the New Orleans franchise. The Pelicans right now, all they've gotten out of 6.5 years of Anthony Davis has been 2 playoff appearances and 1 series win. That's it. That's all they've gotten out of it. So you have a chance now to reboot this thing with what should be the biggest trade package or most substantial trade package in NBA history. This should be bigger than any deal. The return, I'm saying, should be bigger than any deal that's ever been done. Go back to the days of Kareem. This should be bigger than any deal that's ever been done because of the player Anthony Davis is and the age that he is. You're getting it in his prime, first team, all NBA superstar, and you should expect to get as close to dollar for dollar value back in return, whether it's in draft picks or young players. And if you get that, you can do what the Dallas Cowboys did after they traded Herschel Walker. They got all these draft picks. It wound up supplying them with the players that helped build Super Bowl winning teams in the 1990s. If you get Jason Tatum, and I've been on record in the past, this is like a year ago, during Tatum's rookie year, I believe Jason Tatum is capable of averaging 30 points per game in the NBA. I really believe that. He is that type of scoring prospect. Maybe he can't do everything else. Maybe he's not the defensive stopper or rebound or whatever, but pure score, I think Tatum has that 30-point-per-game scoring potential. And if you can get Tatum and the Memphis pick and the Sacramento pick, assuming they're out of the playoffs this year, plus, you know, a handful of other little pieces, that's pretty good for a guy. And that's better than anything else you're going to get, because you're going to get a potential superstar, or at least an all-star, in Jason Tatum, and you're going to have the opportunity to get a top 10 or maybe the number one pick in the draft based on where that Memphis pick falls. So waiting is the only option to me. It would be bonkers if they make this deal beforehand.
Without a doubt. Something that, I mean, you mentioned that Dell Demps is on the hot seat, and, you know, we've talked about Minnesota so much this year. Something that I think isn't maybe getting discussed enough about this is, why are the Pelicans so confident in letting Dell Demps make this decision? I mean, you brought up, you know, 6.5 years you know, only 2 playoff appearances with Anthony Davis. What is New Orleans' track record in putting a good team around Anthony Davis? Like, obviously the Cousins thing kind of created a big issue, and you could talk about that, but the team arguably looked better when Cousins went down. I'm a little also just skeptical at the idea that, like you said, this is going to be so important for the future of their franchise. In some ways, it could set them up for future success. Why are you kind of letting a beleaguered GM do it? That's probably a whole another conversation, but something that I think, you know, should have a little more attention on it.
Oh, I think ultimately you're going to see Mickey Loomis and Gail Benson, the two people that are above Dell Demps on the masthead, you'll see them involved in the final decision-making process. Mm-hmm. Now, I really don't, and it's more speculation at this point, but I just really don't think that they're going to allow a trade like this to go down, unless it is bonkers, unless it's everybody on the Lakers roster outside of LeBron, plus those four first-round picks, unless it's so crazy that you can't pass it up, I don't think it's going to happen. So we'll see. We'll see what happens over the next 48 hours with Anthony Davis. From the Boston side of it, it was an interesting week this past week. You had the Anthony Davis trade talk, the Knicks make a deal, and we'll get to that in a second, where Kristaps Porzingis was shipped out. And all of this comes back to Kyrie Irving. And everybody sees what the Knicks are doing, and they look at the future of Anthony Davis, and they're trying to tie it to Kyrie Irving. And Kyrie had some pretty strong words when he was in New York for the game last week. In the past, you know, going back to the preseason, he has said, I'm committed to the Celtics. He did that video, the commercial, where he said he wanted to see his number up in the rafters with all those Celtic greats. Now, his answer about his commitment to the Celtics, ask me July 1st. He said, I don't know anyone shit, when asked as part of what is one of his responses there. Now, there were some other things that he said, and he did say he was happy with Boston, that they were still the leader here. He acknowledged it's been a frustrating season. That certainly has had an impact on his thinking. But what did you make of the Kyrie Irving reaction this past week and what it could mean for the Celtics?
I mean, you, again, I think you're very connected here. Here's something I'll say about Kyrie. Did anyone really, really believe him when he said that it was in an open and shut case that he was going back to Boston at the beginning of the season? I mean, we've had conversations on this podcast that were like, there's a room for him to leave, right? So I guess I wasn't terribly surprised at any of this when it came out. If anything, I was surprised that he chose to handle it this way, just because it would have been so easy to deflect everything by just, you know, continuing to lie if that's what he was doing, or just pushing it off until the offseason. So I'm not surprised. I mean, I think when it comes to Kyrie, again, you're plugged in. I think you'll have a better sense of this. But my impression is it's going to come down to how well Boston does in the playoffs, right? If this team does end up making the finals, I think it's going to be – I mean, obviously he left a finals-bound team before, so it's not going to make the biggest difference in the world. But I think that'll kind of color his decision a little bit. I mean, part of it has to be – how much the team has kind of struggled. They've had weird cycles this season where they've been playing great like they have now for a stretch. Other times where you wonder what's wrong with them. So I guess for me, I wasn't even surprised at any of this. Like it became such a big deal, but I was like, since when did we start trusting Kyrie Irving and what he was saying publicly?
Yeah, it was stronger than I thought it was going to be. And Kyrie had like 24 hours since the Davis deal. Or not the Davis deal, since the Knicks-Porzingis deal, to kind of wrap his head around what his response was going to be. So it kind of surprised me that he was so defensive in that moment, given that he had to know that those questions were coming. But this was always going to be a work in progress. I'll say this. I had an exchange with a former teammate of Kyrie Irving after all this happened. One thing the former teammate said to me was, Kyrie hates when it seems like his decision is somehow going to be influenced by the decisions made by other players. In other words, he doesn't like, in fact, he downright hates the idea that Kevin Durant could somehow influence his decision to go to New York, or that Anthony Davis could influence his decision to re-sign in Boston. This is, after all, the player who walked away from a three-time Eastern Conference finalist and an NBA champion, who walked away from playing with LeBron James. Kyrie takes great pride, I'm sort of paraphrasing what his ex-teammate told me, takes great pride in being an independent thinker and a man who makes his own decisions about stuff like this. And I think he was, and his teammate thinks he was bothered by the fact that he was being connected through all these other players. The other part of it is, you know, I talked to a lot of people in Boston about Kyrie before and after this. They're not overly concerned about his reaction on that morning in New York. They're not convinced he's staying by any stretch. I mean, that's not the attitude they're taking. What they've been saying is that they view the relationship between Kyrie Irving and the Celtics as a partnership, and they have treated it as such over the last year and a half. They've treated him like the franchise player. They have made sure he is in the loop on their thought process, on everything, including, I believe, Anthony Davis. So they could wind up losing him, but they have been in constant contact with him and really made him part of the organization and the organization's thought process. And I think that's going to go a long way. I was surprised at how unconcerned the Celtics were by Kyrie's outburst in New York.
Well, Boston also, I wouldn't say they have leverage, but they have something in a trump card in that they can offer him the longest deal, right?
Right, which matters.
Yeah,
right?
And that matters. Like, if Boston comes right out of the gate and says 5 years full max, then Kyrie would have to really, really, really dislike Boston, I think, to turn down that extra year and that extra money.
And you have, exactly, because Kyrie Irving is still a player, even though he's been healthy this year and having maybe his best season. Kyrie Irving is still a player that in the last few years has had three knee surgeries. So there's a lot of people, and this is more outside people saying this, but there have been a lot of people that have said this is Kyrie Irving putting pressure on the organization to come to the table with a full five-year max offer. No conditions, no protections in case there's an injury to the knee, a full five-year max offer. And I'll tell you, I've yet to hear, you know, in the last year or so, since Kyrie came back, and really mostly been reinforced since he came back healthy at the start of the season, I've never heard any talk of anything but a full five-year max level extension for Kyrie Irving. So I think that's going to be there for him. And I'm with you. I think he's going to have a hard time ultimately turning it down.
Yeah, I just need people to stop listening so hard to what he says publicly, because that's when you get burned.
Oh, and parsing it too, and like kind of like, you know, all you read on these clips or these headlines is "Ask me July 1st," yeah, or, you know, "I don't know anyone shit." Like, that's all you kind of read, and there's more to it than that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It was certainly an interesting this past week for the Celtics. It'd be an interesting couple of days. They kind of wait to see what happens. One more thing in the Lakers, LaVar Ball reemerges from the shadows of the JBL.
The Undertaker gif is what, yes, LeVar Ball just did, yes.
LeVar Ball pops out and declares that he doesn't want Lonzo playing for the Pelicans. That if he had his druthers, well, first it'd be L.A., and then if it's not L.A., Phoenix.
Good use of druthers. Good for you.
Yes, if the Phoenix Suns he wants Lonzo mm-hmm. to play for. What do you make of LeVar emerging from the shadows to make this proclamation?
Okay, first of all, Lonzo on Phoenix doesn't sound awful. I mean, they need a point guard. They still don't really have a point guard.
Sure.
You know, they need someone who's not going to demand the ball from Devin Booker. That's Lonzo. I mean, someone who run pick and rolls with DeAndre Ayton. So first of all, actually like a pretty good idea. I like the idea of Lonzo and Phoenix. Do I think LeVar has any power in derailing a potential Lakers deal? I don't think so. I don't think that the Pelicans are going to pay him any attention until they absolutely have to. I also think it is, if for any reason all the parties are involved, I think it would be pretty easy to get Lonzo to Phoenix and get an equally intriguing piece back in either New Orleans or Los Angeles. So I honestly didn't care too much about the LeVar Ball thing. To me, it was a chuckle, but then, like, let's get right back to business here. I don't think he's going to hold any power over any of these teams.
I don't think so either, but I think we have to remember just how big a distraction he was in Lonzo's first year mm-hmm. and some of the things he said. Now, I don't know what happened in the last 6 to 8 months.
I know what happened. They signed LeBron James.
Well, yeah, but there have also been people that have suggested that, you know, LeVar is on the payroll in Los Angeles, that you know, if nothing else, that the stature of LeBron and Magic Johnson have convinced him to back down. You put Lonzo in a different situation with, you know, a group around him that doesn't have that stature. Are we right back where we started? Are we back, you know, with LeVar mouthing off and criticizing Alvin Gentry's coaching and, you know, going after some of the front office moves and being a daily distraction for a team? I mean, that's not something that especially a young team, really any team, but especially a young team wants to deal with, do they? I mean, I don't think he could derail a trade like this, but I think his reemergence certainly plants a seed in the minds of any executive trying to trade for Lonzo to remind them that this guy's still around, and this guy could still be a problem.
That's true. I will say that if Lonzo does somehow end up in Phoenix, LeVar is going to try to coach that team. There's no doubt in my mind that he's going to, like, if Lonzo ends up in Phoenix, LeVar is going to feel like he has the run of the whole show there. So I do agree that it probably got an eye roll from front offices around the league. But I think for teams, it's kind of like we have to cross that bridge when we get there. Because at least for now, I think Lonzo has enough potential that you'd still be willing to take that risk.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the Knicks. New York shocked everybody this past week when they made a deal, trading Kristaps Porzingis to Dallas in exchange for Dennis Smith, a couple of first-round picks, and cap space. The cap space presumably to be used this summer. They have now cleared double max cap space to presumably go after Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, insert star free agent name here. The Knicks are once again committing fully to free agency. What was your reaction, Rohan, to the Knicks' decision to move off of Kristaps Porzingis?
So I was on my flight back from Bombay when this trade went down, and the succession, the quickness with which it happened, with first the report that maybe Porzingis was unhappy to the trade actually happening, was crazy. I think I was somewhere over Afghanistan when the trade happened. It was crazy. I mean, my immediate reaction, I wrote about this for SI, this is directly tied to Kevin Durant. And there are people who are going to move the goalposts and say, if the Knicks don't get Kevin Durant, they still have flexibility, blah, blah, blah. You can't do that. If they don't sign Kevin Durant, this trade was a disaster. So in that sense, they have a little bit of a reprieve, right? They have these months to go get the big star in free agency. But if they don't, this was so colossally stupid. They salary dumped their best guy. They've had this millennium. I mean, the only hope that they had in this franchise, who had every right to be upset, who had every right not to trust this front office. And the idea that Kristaps was unhappy and he didn't want to commit to the future, so the Knicks shipped him out, I don't buy that as the narrative for a second. Okay, you don't come up with a deal like this in the matter of, you know, a few hours or something like that. You know, the Mavs were trying to get rid of Dennis Smith for a while, and no one wanted him. And you give up Kristaps Porzingis from him? It's absurd to me. I think what happened here is the Knicks are either literally tampering, have some kind of handshake deal in place with Kevin Durant and maybe one other guy. They saw an opportunity to dump Porzingis, and they tried to get out front and control the narrative by saying he didn't want to be there. I don't know that I buy that even for a second. I just think it's so colossally risky. And here's the thing. Let's say Kristaps really does only take the qualifying offer. You know what? If you're the Knicks, you live with that. Then you have a great player making peanuts, and you can still sign a star, and you can still have a great draft pick and figure out your team from there. This is just such a big risk to take unless you have assurances. And let's say they do have somehow an assurance from Kevin Durant, and every NBA writer will tell you they've heard from someone that he's going to sign with the Knicks. KD's agent is not exactly hiding his love of the Knicks, whatever it is. Do you trust Kevin Durant to have his mind made up right now that he's coming to New York in the summer? This is just so colossally risky to me. And if this ends up with the Knicks getting Jimmy Butler and Kemba Walker, then it was a bad move. I think it's all about Kevin Durant. That was my immediate reaction to it. That's how we're going to judge this trade 5-10 years from now. So the Knicks basically have to be working every day to sign him. Otherwise, this was just dumb.
Now, Kevin Durant is going to have multiple, like, great options this summer, not the least of which is going to be going back to Golden State.
No
to
doubt.
Potentially win championship 4, 5, 6.
Why wouldn't you sign with Brooklyn instead of the Knicks?
Well, look, there are a lot of reasons. I think going to the Knicks has as much to do with marketing and the possibility that if you can win a championship there, you're a god for life. Like, if you can break the, what is it now, almost 50-year streak of...
Do we even know that? Like, people say that, but, like...
I think that's true. I think if you win a championship in New York, it carries more weight than a championship pretty much anywhere else at this point. Given that it's, what, 72, 73 was the last year for the Knicks. I mean, Dave DeBuscher was playing with the Knicks last one a championship. So I get it from that perspective. I do... Where I agree with you is that it's a monster risk. And I really think we're forgetting just how much potential Kristaps Porzingis has.
Agreed.
Kristaps Porzingis, and I've said this, I've used this phrase before, he has the potential to revolutionize the center position in the same way that Dirk Nowitzki revolutionized the power forward position. He's a 7'3" big man who can shoot threes at a pretty good rate and is only going to get better. Now,
he plays defense.
He does. The Knicks have kind of spun a yarn a little bit that...
Oh, they've spun.
This guy doesn't want to be here, so we don't want guys that don't want to be here. Okay, I'm not so sure that Porzingis really didn't want to be in New York. One thing I know about Porzingis and the people around him, they're very much aware of the power that comes with being an international player playing in New York. Porzingis knows that his global brand benefits from being a star on the New York Knicks. So I don't really believe that Porzingis wanted out. I think he wanted some clarity, and I think he wanted to be more involved in the process as the franchise player than he was with the Knicks and their front office. Now, from the Knicks side, I just don't get it. They would have had the ability to clear single max space this summer. They would have had to make some moves,
exactly.
But they could have done it. They could have cleared single max space this summer. And with single max space, Porzingis, and potentially a top five pick, maybe number one, you're going to have the ability to recruit somebody. You're going to be able to sell the Knicks franchise and its future, regardless of how far down the drain this season goes. Now, you are really banking on Kevin Durant wanting to be a Knick. You are really banking on Kyrie Irving wanting to be a Knick. Because those two guys, if you don't get both of them, this is a failure. Because I'm convinced.
Agreed.
I'm convinced that Porzingis is going to blossom into a star in Dallas. He is playing with a guy he's very comfortable with, Luka Doncic, and he's playing for a coaching staff and organization that have helped build Nowitzki into the player that he came. And I wouldn't be surprised, Rohan, if Nowitzki says, you know what, man, I'll stay around for one more year. He's never announced his retirement. Everybody's kind of treating it like this is his last season. Maybe it is, but with Porzingis being there, I would imagine that the Mavericks, even if it's not as a player, would want him around as much as possible to kind of mentor him as a seven-footer who plays on the outside. I think this is a home run for the Dallas Mavericks and a potentially franchise-changing risk for the New York Knicks.
I agree. We're not talking enough about the Dallas aspect of it, probably because Kristaps isn't even going to play this year. It's a home run, no-brainer for them. I mean, Dennis Smith, some people are calling him, you know, one of the worst guards in the league. I mean, no-brainer for them. There's no downside for Dallas. I think it's going to be a great move for them long-term. You know, for the Knicks, it comes down to, unless something they know something crazy about his knee, you're trading someone who has just as much superstar potential as most of the guys you want to sign this summer. And you just look at what happened to Philadelphia last year. I mean, they had the perfect landing spot. Remember, people were saying, here's how the Sixers could conceivably get Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. They had the assets, they had the cap space to do all of that. And they were coming off a great playoff run, an ascending team, and look at what happened. They couldn't, you know, Paul George didn't want to go there, LeBron didn't want to go there, never really made a serious offer for Kawhi. And now they have three top 20 guys, three top 15 guys, and they still fall just a little bit short of a true title contender, right? And for some reason, the Knicks, I just think that the free agency thing has swung almost a little bit too far. It's become too popular for how big of a risk it is. The Clippers, the Nets, they're going to have huge cap space. There's not enough stars to go around for all these teams. The Lakers, Clippers, and Nets are all going to be looking for stars. So one of these teams is going to get left out. And New York, I think, again, maybe they have the handshake agreement in place, but what's going to happen if they get left out? Are they prepared for that? Because they could have been if they'd kept Porzingis.
Yeah, this is an even bigger risk than 2010, the last time they went all in on free agency, because to clear the space back then, they moved off some good players like Crawford, Zach Randolph, all that stuff, but nobody on the level of Porzingis. I mean,
certainly
Porzingis is in his early 20s, and everybody's talking about the injury. I mean, it's an ACL injury. I mean, let's be real. The NBA's figured out ACL injuries.
Yeah, I'm not like, I don't have any hesitation over the injury whatsoever, and maybe that's me being a little naive, but I'm with you there. Like, I have... There's no gut response for you that's like ACL. Oh my God, big deal. He'll be back in a year and he'll be fine.
Yeah, that's not an issue. That now they're, and this also, it flies in the face of everything that they've said
exactly
over the last year. Like the last year, I mean, I was in Vegas this past summer, and after they signed Azonia, they sat down, kind of talked about their plan, and their plan made some sense. Like over the last few years, all they've been doing is been the, you know, SS good money after bad. Like, that's, I mean, it's been insane. And they signed these guys. Now they're signing guys to one-year contracts. They're maintaining financial flexibility. And they just threw all that out. They're saying, we're going to go back in and all in on free agency. And again, you know, we talked about the Lakers and how Davis and LeBron, you just paired them together. They're not automatically a title contender the next season. It's the same thing with Durant and Kyrie Irving. Like, you put those two guys together with no real roster around them. I don't know what they are at this point. You know, both those guys, well, Durant anyway, will be over 30. Kyrie's got a history of injuries. You're just taking a big risk when you could have slow played this thing, brought Porzingis back next year. Maybe you're pairing him with Zion Williamson. And then maybe you have, Jimmy Butler's a guy that scares me too. Maybe you have a Durant in that fold to start to build this thing up, you know, in a natural way. Going all in on free agency has proven time and again to be a risky proposition.
Yeah, I just think that I would rather have Porzingis and another star than the route that they're going with, which is maybe Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. I'd rather have Porzingis in hand and then use him to go get another guy than get rid of him and now try to go sign two max guys when you had an equal talent already on the roster. I just think it's wild, man. Also, LeBron and Anthony Davis together is a title contender. Let me take you out of that bubble for a second. You put those two guys together, guess what? That team is competing to either make the finals in the West, and if they win that series, they're going to be the title favorite, okay?
What are you talking about?
You keep dropping that Anthony Davis and LeBron together isn't an automatic title contender. Did you see the team LeBron James took to the finals last year? LeBron and Anthony Davis together, in any scenario, is a title contender.
It's not in any scenario because
yes.
You do have to flesh out the roster and the team. And look, LeBron James.
Give LeBron and Anthony Davis, Rodney Hood, George Hill, and Kyle Korver, and it's a title contender.
Okay, but can they get any of those guys?
Yeah, they can get the equivalents of those guys, is my point. Like, you need to just dial back. I know that I've been gone for a couple weeks, and you had your buddy Scalabrini on, and it was
okay.
The Pats won, so you're feeling yourself a little bit right now. I get it, but let me bring you back down to reality. LeBron and Anthony Davis together on any team, in any basketball league, on any planet, is a title contender.
Oh, my God. What am I even listening to right now? They were in the Eastern Conference the last few years. Let's take that into account, number one. In the Western Conference, they're going to have to go up against Golden State, who even without Durant is still going to have
Tell me which team in the West, outside of Golden State.
Denver.
You're going to take Denver? I love Denver. I picked Denver to make the freaking NBA Finals, okay? And I'm not taking the Nuggets over the hypothetical LeBron Anthony Davis team.
Oklahoma City.
They have two. Look at their Thunder. Perfect example.
So you.
None of their other guys are special.
Hold on.
None of their other guys are special. Steven Adams is a very, very good player. Very, very good player.
Pretty good.
Terrence Ferguson is also starting for them.
They've drafted well over the last few years.
Certainly.
You're not at all concerned about this recent injury to LeBron because this was the longest time he's been out with an injury. And look, I'm not going to read too much into it yet, but somebody brought up to me that. This is kind of how it started with Kobe, too. Like, with the nagging injuries and the stuff that starts to get to you. Now, maybe it's just a bump on the road, but at some point, LeBron is going to regress. And we've already seen him. Look, before everybody jumps on me, he's still a great player who elevates players around him like no player I have ever seen. Like, that's a given. But he's going to be 35 years old next season if Anthony Davis winds up there. You're not at all concerned about that being a factor, that 35-year-old LeBron and Anthony Davis, as you're saying, are definitely a title contender?
I'm a little bit concerned, but more so in the future, not in the long term, not in the immediate future. Immediate future, you get me Anthony Davis, put him together with LeBron, that's a title contender. Those teams always get fleshed out. That's the thing that you're, for some reason, glossing over, but they'll get guys. They'll get enough quality guys. Average guys, whoever it is.
But they don't always get fleshed out. That's a ridiculous statement. They don't always get fleshed out because the Washington Wizards haven't been able to do it, and they don't have a LeBron player.
Don't compare.
They don't have a LeBron player, but at one point, John Wall, elite top 5 point guard. Bradley Beal, elite top 2 shooting guard. They've been discussed as the best backcourt in the NBA.
By who? Because those people were idiots.
Well, they've been talked about as one of the best backcourts in the NBA. The reason that Golden State was able to do what they did is that they were smart with who they drafted. They got Draymond Green in the second round. Harrison Barnes was a lottery pick, but that was a smart one. They were shrewd with their drafting and with their deals. The Lakers have a very short window to do that with LeBron James on the team and able to play at a championship level. I just don't buy that just the two of them makes that team a championship team.
Yeah, I disagree. I think you get those two together, and then it's not as difficult as you're making it seem to figure out that they can get a Terrence Ferguson type. They can get a Mario Chalmers type. Those are the kinds of guys LeBron has elevated in the past. They don't need to get, you know, they just need to hit singles and doubles from that point after getting Anthony Davis. And those two guys will make everyone around them better.
Singles and doubles aren't easy. You know, drafting these guys, and look, I'm going to give the Lakers credit. Their drafts have been solid. You know, Josh Hart back into the first round. That was an excellent pick.
Kyle Kuzma.
Kuzma, excellent pick. They have done a great job.
Zubac has played well this year.
Yeah, they've done a really good job, but they're going to have to continue to do that to get guys that can play alongside LeBron James. All right, let me finish with this. There are other teams out there, you know, working right now at making trades before the trade deadline. Give me the most interesting name to you, the non-Anthony Davis section of all this, the most interesting name to you that could be dealt before the deadline.
That's a really good question. I'm really interested to see where Mike Conley goes. You know, his name has been mentioned to the Jazz. They've been linked together. I think that makes so much sense. You know, Mike Conley, I mean, we kind of saw his value to the Grizzlies last year, right? How quickly their season went to the tank as soon as he got injured. I don't think Mike Conley completely changes the ceiling of a team, but I think he can make a real impact in a place like Utah. So I'm really interested to see where he goes. You haven't heard anything about it. He's probably not going to get moved. Maybe he's a buyout guy. Trevor Ariza, I'm a little interested to see if his name pops back up into these rumors. I'd really love to see him somewhere like Oklahoma City. Again, he might be more of a buyout guy than a trade guy, but Mike Conley is probably the name that I want to see get moved the most.
I'm going to throw a different name at you that I haven't seen out there too much.
Is it your boy Chandler Parsons? Or
it's not. Eric Bledsoe.
Okay. Wow.
Name out there. There are some teams that have talked to Milwaukee about Bledsoe. He's having a pretty good season. He's averaging like 16 points per game. Three-point shooting, not great. The reason I think Milwaukee might be open to dealing him is I'm not sure that Bledsoe is in the team's long-term plan. Short-term, absolutely. And this team, maybe you hold on to him if for no other reason than you're trying to make a run to the finals this year. But long-term, they need to find a second star to put next to Giannis. I mean, the gap between, like, Chris Middleton's an all-star, and good for him. He's a solid player and a great guy. But the gap between Giannis and the next best player in Milwaukee, when you look at the top-tier teams, it's bigger than the gap between the number one player, number two player, anywhere else. Like, whether it's Toronto with Kawhi and Kyle Lowry, Boston, Kyrie Irving, Jason Tatum, whoever you want to put in that mix. You go out in the Western Conference, Oklahoma City, Russell Westbrook, Chris Paul, Houston, Paul George, Houston, Chris Paul, and James Harden. They got to find that second star. And to get enough money to clear the second star, eventually they have to move off Eric Bledsoe. So if they want to go out, and I think Kemba Walker is a great fit out there. If the Hornets nickel and dime Kemba Walker, I think Milwaukee is a great place for Kemba to play alongside Giannis in one of the best pick and roll kind of combinations you're going to see in a long time. So I don't know that he gets traded, but I think Eric Bledsoe is someone that has generated interest league wide. Let's put it that way.
That's really interesting. That's a legitimately good point from you. You didn't say something stupid that time. So congrats.
No, hey, well, I'm glad I'm glad from India you were able to keep your finger on the pulse of all this there, Rohan, with your LeBron and Anthony Davis takes, the two of them together.
Yeah, that's. Let me tell you, that immediately becomes the best duo in the NBA.
But here's like just one last thing on all this. Anthony Davis, look, one thing, and I wrote this today, Boston has done a lot of research on Anthony Davis, and they believe that winning to him matters above all else, that he is just desperate to taste winning. And he said as much. Like, Rich Paul, in the statement he made with the request of a trade demand, said Anthony wants to go to a place he can consistently win and compete for championships. Anthony Davis told reporters, it's my time. I need to win. I want to win. When asked about the reasons why he wanted a trade, can you objectively say that, looking at the next 5 years, that Anthony Davis has a better chance of winning in Los Angeles than he would in Boston?
It's a very good question. I I can't say for sure that it's LA over Boston, but I think it's a lot closer than you think.
It's you put a guy with LeBron, they're a good team, but Anthony Davis on Boston, they're a great team, and they're immediately the top team in the Eastern Conference, and who knows what happens in the Western Conference moving forward. I mean, people listening to this podcast are going to say that I'm a shill for Boston.
Yeah, you are. The person on this podcast with you is going to tell you that you're a shill for Boston.
I'm not. I couldn't possibly care less if they make this deal. Objectively, you have to look at this. And again, I go back to everybody that I've talked to has said it's bonkers for the Pelicans to make a deal before the deadline. And then when you get past the deadline, if the Celtics are offering you Jason Tatum and that Memphis pick plus a bunch of other things, how do you turn that down?
I agree, but to your earlier question, if Kyrie leaves and the Celtics trade Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis, if I were him, I'd rather be on the Lakers.
Well, I do think there's a chicken and the egg thing there. I mean, whether Kyrie says it or not, I don't believe, this is more conjecture on my part, I don't believe that if Anthony Davis, and look, we both know if a deal like this gets done, it's done like mid-June. Like, they're not going to discuss this after July 1st. As soon as like February 8th comes around, they'll start discussing parameters for it and then get into it after the season is over. This will be done before the draft, before all of it, before we even get to the start of free agency. And I think by then, they'll have a pretty good idea through back channels about who's going where and who wants to stay and all that stuff.
All right. But
we shall see. Rohan, always great to have you back, man. Appreciate you joining me, and we'll catch up next time.
Sounds good, man.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, you can read his stuff in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. It's a great job covering the Miami Heat. He's Ira Winderman. Ira, thanks for joining me, man.
Glad to be here. Just wish it wasn't in the Arctic of Boston on the worst day ever.
Yeah, it's kind of fitting that the Miami Heat come to Boston to play on what has been the coldest day of the season. I around noontime, I opened up my phone, looked at the weather, solid 4 degrees.
Yeah, but don't tell them about the minus 12 part also.
It is. There's a bit of a wind chill out there. That'll get you. I actually don't mind the cold. I do mind the wind chill. I can live with 4 degrees. I can't live with that whipping winds that just bite you every time out.
You know, it's like in Miami in the summer when people say it's not the heat, it's humidity. No, it's both.
It's a little bit of both. All right, let's talk about the Miami Heat. And, you know, from the outside, when I've seen the Heat play a couple of times, a lot on TV, it feels like another kind of typical Heat season where they are willing to do anything and everything to get wins. Obviously, the backdrop of Dwayne Wade's final year adds some intrigue to it, but it just feels like this is once again a Heat team that is, you know, trying to claw out every win they can, get into the playoffs under any circumstance possible, and see what happens from there. Is that a fair assessment?
That's who they are. That, you know, you hear this term in their DNA, but they refuse to tank. Matter of fact, you get ejected from the arena if you use the word tank. You can use foul language, you can't use tank. It's who they are and what they believe in. And it's funny because the writers from Cleveland were down the other day, and I was saying the amazing thing about the Heat is since LeBron James left, they have played a grand total of one game that didn't have playoff implications during the regular season. That's when they had to lose in Philadelphia to keep the first-round pick, to keep Justice Winslow. And that's what Eric Spoelstra will tell you. All our games are meaningful. That's what they're selling to the fans. But you're right, Chris. The overriding thing of the Dwayne Wade farewell tour, you don't notice as much, they're back at 500 again. Instead, you know, when you're reaching a point where we're coming in to a game in Boston from Chicago and Dwayne Wade is exchanging jerseys with Benny the Bull, you realize it's more about basketball this season.
Yeah, Benny the Bull, Terry Rozier, he's kind of ebbed and flowed who he's swapping jerseys
up and down there.
Jerseys with there. Let me ask you this. The way they play, you know, it obviously starts at the top, Pat Riley and his sort of directive for all this. How much do you think it has to do with Riley's age and a clock ticking on his basketball career?
I think the personnel moves, you're right about that. But I think Pat Riley, look, he stepped aside after Michael Beasley came and he understood you sometimes have to go to the bottom. So I don't think Pat is going to sabotage things, trade more draft choices. As a matter of fact, I think that's off the table for the Heat. He understands the need for a future. But he wants to go out in a prideful way, which is the playoffs and things looking better. And the Heat's thought is this. They hit on Josh Richardson in the second round. They hit in Bam Adebayo in the middle of the first round. And you remember from being in Boston, the whole to-do about Justice Winslow and the Celtics were offering 4 first-round picks, and they stood by Justice Winslow, which for the previous 3 years was the worst trade not made in Heat history, and now is starting to come around a little. So Pat Riley's thought is this. They have Winslow. They have Richardson. They have Adebayo. They finally have the young base to build off of. Now the question is, Chris, is that enough to lure a free agent?
What do you think of that young base? Because, you know, there are some good players in that mix. I think Josh Rich is a good player. I'm not sure there's a great player in that mix.
But you know what? Here's what it is. Any free agent alpha who is airlifted in there knows he's the man. The perfect example is Jimmy Butler. He goes to Philadelphia. Now he's sort of rubbing a little with Simmons, with Embiid, who's the man. Am I all of a sudden not even a beta, but a number three? So they can sort of entice a free agent saying, hey, you can have your team. You can be the man. I think Jimmy Butler saw that also. Justice Winslow, as much as he's a playmaker and now he's sort of a triple-double threat, he's not a leading guy. He'll almost tell you that. He likes to be a facilitator. Josh Richardson, easygoing guy. Great number two, probably number three. Bam Adebayo, the same thing. So what the Heat are going to try to do is say, come to Miami, be the man. 2020 is when they'll have their cap space. It could be sooner, depending on some other machinations.
A name you didn't mention, Hassan Whiteside. How does he fit into that mix?
You know, Chris, I didn't mention that on purpose because
I have
a hard time selling that. And it's interesting because when I speak to a lot of people who don't watch the games and just look at the box scores, you know, you'll see that on the pregame shows, oh, Hassan Whiteside is coming into X Arena, wherever he are tonight, bringing his double-double possibilities. But it doesn't translate, Chris. That's the real problem. And if you think the Heat are going to, I don't want to say dupe someone, but close to that, to get out of the final year and a half of his contract, it's not going to happen. We've seen this all the time in this league. There are statistical big men and there are contributing big men, sort of like Andre Drummond also. These great rebounding numbers every year, Pistons scramble to make the playoffs. He's just the wrong player at the wrong time and really an atypical Miami Heat player.
Do you think they regret giving him that deal? Because they were the team that discovered this. I mean, he bounced around Europe. His story is well known. They were the team that unlocked the talent in Hassan Whiteside. But I mean, look at where they are now. Like you said, I firmly believe they'd get off that contract if there was remotely possible. I think they regret giving him that deal.
Two things. They fall in love with their developmental projects, and that has been a problem for years. And now even Rodney Magruder, who's up for a free agent contract, probably will get overpaid by the Heat. Tyler Johnson, another example. They love creating something out of nothing. They've done that for years. Do they regret it? At the moment, they didn't. Remember, Dallas was 1 minute later at the door there. Portland was interested. And now was the time. It seems crazy to talk about this. Only 3 years ago, when centers still mattered in the NBA. The game has changed so much away from Hassan Whiteside. He almost never plays in fourth quarters now. Opponents go small. You can't put him in there. They try to play around with the zone a little bit. So I think he's, as much as anything, the wrong player for the wrong time in the NBA, not even just for the Heat.
So was it the game that changed, or did he change after he got that contract? Or were there just warts in his game that weren't discoverable, or at least weren't thought of as significantly when Miami gave him that deal?
I think he just topped out. He maxed out as a double-double machine, but what does it contribute to? That was the problem. I don't think he's the kind of guy who he got the money or he wants to be a leading man. I think he just, you know, you don't want to sign a player at the apex. That's what the Heat did. The day the Heat signed Hassan Whiteside, it's sort of like driving a car off the lot. He immediately depreciated. That's what happened for the Heat. Again, so many of these Heat contracts, Chris, if they were only for 2 years, Deion Waiters, Kelly Olynyk, James Johnson. The problem for the Heat is you get 4 years. Now they're in the last 2 years of a lot of those deals and just in a waiting game.
So when you talk to people at the upper levels of the organization, what's the plan? Is it to, you know, eventually land that top flight free agent to go with all these young players? Do you think they have a target in mind over the next 2 years? Because right now it's kind of like hopping on the hamster wheel. Like, here we go. Let's maybe make the playoffs, get beat in the first round. Off we go again.
It's 2020 when the contracts of Tyler Johnson, Hassan Whiteside, and Goran Dragic expire. Of course, 2020 was the year of Anthony Davis, but now we all know in the NBA, no one waits for free agency anymore. So that was the target. Perfect Pat Riley guy. I mean, you jump in among all these guys, everyone on this roster would compliment him. We now know that the Anthony Davis thing will either be played out at the trading deadline, more likely this offseason. That won't happen. So they'll scour through the list, but 2020 right now is the time that they can drop someone in there. And you know what? They've always found a way. They're in a little bit of a lull right now. They thought Hassan Whiteside or Goran Dragic was that guy, but this is the team of Shaq. This is the team of Alonzo Mourning and Tim Hardaway. I think that would be Pat Riley's last hurrah. When you're asking me when does Pat's end game, I think Pat would love nothing more than to leave after the press conference, because at the press conference, it's all good. So you bring in your version of not Anthony Davis, a guy like that, week or two later, Pat Riley steps aside after a W, which he wouldn't be assured in the standings otherwise.
We've seen the failure over the last couple of years, Tom Thibodeau being the most recent of the coach president. But do you think that Eric Spoelstra is kind of earmarked for those dual responsibilities whenever Pat Riley's time's done?
I asked Eric about that and wrote a story in the Sun Sentinel, and Michael Jackson didn't do a better moonwalk backwards than Eric Spoelstra because he knows what it sounds like. And he knows as long as Pat is there, it's an awful sounding thing to say, I want to be the successor. It's almost like you're waiting on the corpse or something. It's morbid. Eric Spoelstra, in his contract, has personnel input. Not final say, but definitive input. He has been in the room all the time. I mean, he was at an Applebee's recruiting Greg Oden. Now, that didn't work out too well. But, you know, when players come to the arena, when Gordon Hayward came, it was Pat Riley who took the lead. And there's that famous story of Gordon Hayward's wife turning to Gordon and asking about Pat Riley, who is he? So the question becomes, has Pat, I don't want to say aged out, but it's a different era right now. Eric Spoelstra will be the face of the Heat going forward. Will he be the ultimate personnel voice? I don't know if that's Andy Ellisberg. I don't know if Nick Arison gets more involved. But Eric Spoelstra will have both coaching and personnel input, absolutely.
Yeah, you just mentioned basically the four people that have input, Riley, Andy, Nick Arison, and Eric Spoelstra. They keep a pretty tight circle when it comes to personnel decisions, don't they?
Well, that's the whole thing. If there's going to be a change off the Riley regime, it's going to be dramatic. I'm not so sure Eric Spoelstra would stay then. I mean, he has stability like no one else in the Eastern Conference and really no one else outside of Greg Popovich. Game against the Celtics, he is going to tie Pat Riley for regular season games coached most by a Heat coach. So he clearly has a longevity factor. I think if Mickey Arison ever moves away and brings in another guy, and there's that Duke connection, and people have mentioned that for years, I think that's when Eric Spoelstra might look. I mean, God bless Terry Stotts, but might look to the Northwest to go back home or something else. So when this regime ends, it's going to be dramatically different.
Well, Eric Spoelstra, I think you and I would both agree, could walk away from the Heat, take a year off if it was necessary, do television, and then be the most sought-after coach in the free agent market. His age, his success, his track record. I think Portland would be a possibility too because of the family connection. I think he has a restaurant out there, too, right?
Yes, he does have a restaurant.
I think treated, I ate there, actually.
Treated the players, but not the media, but that's another story
that's
for another day.
That's harsh. But I think there isn't a team in the league that wouldn't run on him and throw $10 million at him.
And that's why through the blips and the ups and the downs and people, they've only won one playoff series since LeBron left. They've only won one playoff game in the last 30 years. There's a bigger picture. And again, Chris, I would put it this way. When you look at the record relative to the roster that Eric Spoelstra has worked with, there's never a question. You know, could Eric Spoelstra have a better record? I don't know if he can with this roster. I don't know if you put Popovich or Phil Jackson or Red Auerbach with this Heat roster right now if they'd be much better than 500. What Eric Spoelstra has done is he's taken a 500-level roster to 500.
So what have you made of the Dwayne Wade retirement tour?
I thought it was going to be over the top, and at times it is, when he literally is looking around after a game who to give a jersey to. And I cannot get emotional about the jersey exchanges with Spencer Dinwiddie or Glenn Robinson III, but I understand there are agents and other factors and things like that. And on Saturday night when I was in Chicago and Benny the Bull is exchanging jerseys, I realized some of this is choreographed. But I got to tell you, this is so much different than the Kobe farewell tour because winning still matters and Dwayne still has it. And I will be fascinated by the all-star process, whether the fans / media / players vote him in or the coaches do, because based on his performance this season, there are probably six guards in the East who deserve it more than Dwayne. But he's such a beloved figure that I wonder who in that process is going to make sure that Dwayne gets in. Kobe's last year, he got voted in. It was just pure fan vote. The coaches could sort of wipe their hands. Hey, we had nothing to do with it. But if it is Kemba Walker and if it is Kyrie as the two starters in the East, would coaches who've spoken all season about beloved Dwayne being so beloved, would they vote him in? I'm very curious about that.
That's hard because you'd probably have to leave someone from the Bradley Beal, Ben Simmons,
Kyle Lowry, Victor Oladipo.
Oladipo. That's hard. And for those young guys who an all-star nod could mean something, I mean, maybe not contractually in a literal sense, but it's a nice feather in the cap. That's a hard thing to do. But I'll be interested to see him there. His future, you know, I hear a lot of broadcasting people say he could be one of the more sought-after broadcasting free agents if that's the direction he wants to go. What do you think Dwayne Wade wants to do?
I think he looks at Chris Bosh, who obviously left under other circumstances, as sort of an everything kind of man. And I think Dwayne wants a year or two of that. I mean, Chris Bosh has shown up at just eclectic places, at the electronics show in Vegas doing some TV work, the Martin Luther King Day in Memphis. He was honored for that. I think Dwayne wants that kind of ride. I think it's some Hollywood in him. As much as he's been Mr. South Florida, he's always had the home in L.A. Gabrielle Union has her acting out there. I'm really curious if he looks for some acting vehicles with his wife. I just, you know, he's done some movies. He did the movie with Queen Latifah, the basketball movie a few years back. I think Dwayne might like to try the silver screen, might like to try some comedic episodal comedy, things like that. I think he can do whatever he wants. I think basketball almost might be a step back, but I do think eventually the Heat bring everyone back. Shane Battier, Alonzo Mourning, Keith Askins, people who have been Heat lifers always find a landing spot in the Heat. I think he'll have some role with the Heat going forward.
Well, Space Jam 2, right? You've got a he's got a magic.
If LeBron shuts
that,
him out of that, exactly.
He can't
yeah.
be shut out. That train wreck too, maybe we can get a sequel there. All right, let me finish with this.
Sure.
For this season, what's the wild card to you? I mean, let's assume they get into the playoffs and one of those back end of the conference seed. That's a tough hill to climb if you're looking at Toronto, Boston, Philadelphia, Milwaukee. I mean, how do they win a first-round series? What's the wild card to you?
Well, it's interesting. You left one team out who's a guaranteed top five team, and that's Indiana. I think there's going to be some manipulating by teams if they can to try to get a Pacers series. No offense to the Pacers, what Victor Oladipo, Miles Turner's growth or whatever, but it's still a better option than Toronto having to keep Kawhi and Boston and Philadelphia. But it's interesting, Chris, as the Heat have played all those teams, every one of those coaches has basically said, this is not a team you want to play in the playoffs. This is a team who's going to grit and grind you and take something out of you for the next round after that. So I think it'll be a similar end as it was last season, lost in five games, tough games to Philadelphia. The whole question is, everyone's talking about Dwayne's final home game, April 9th against Philadelphia. Will that be the end? Or is it going to end with a playoff loss? I think it's going to end somewhere in the postseason. It'll be the final game. The one thing is good. He's been definitive. This is it. This is one last dance. This will be his final season. No wavering. Even though Pat Riley said, we're going to try to bring it back for a little more, I think he's been good about that, so he's made it worthwhile. It'll be interesting to see where it ends. Chris, I would be very surprised if it ends any deeper than the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I can't see Dwayne coming back, unless there was like an extreme amount of money. Even then,
he'd have a lot of jerseys to give back.
Exactly. And plus, he's not a guy that... I mean, he's accomplished everything you can accomplish.
There's
he's
more
won championships.
There's more to him, and it's just like Chris Bosh. I think he wants to be more of a person.
Where
also.
Is Chris Bosh these? I have seen him pop up here
he's
and there.
He's been at American Airlines Arena so much lately
really?
That it's a beautiful thing to see finally the bad blood member mm-hmm. getting out of the contract and all of that. And remember, the All-Star game this year will be three full years since Chris Bosh has played his last game. But again, I think he's going to be another one of those Heat lifers who comes back. Chris, it really is sort of a cult down there.
Mm-hmm. Ira, keep up the great work, man. You can follow Ira on Twitter at Ira Heat Beat and read his stuff in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Thanks for joining me, man.
It's a cold reality today in Boston, but I appreciate it. Thank you, Chris.
You got it. All right, that's it for this week's episode. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.